You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
Yeah, I can't think of any insult in sports worse than being soft. You guys can text if you got a thought. 206-421-3776.
I think the cheater one is probably the closest.
Yeah, saying someone's dirty, but I think so many people are that they're like, well,
yeah,
pot, kettle, all of that. Like, I'm not gonna,
because every sport has that too.
Right. Not gonna spend my time calling anybody dirty. Everybody's dirty, whatever. So you just kind of move on past that. Yeah, I think it's soft, Justin. I think it really is. You ask a good question, but I think it's a fairly, I don't know if they say easy answer, but I don't know what else comes close. Other than, yeah, maybe cheater is in that world, especially in golf, just because of the,
maybe a quitter.
Ooh, a quit, but isn't that the same thing?
Yeah, I guess soft would lead to quitting. Soft also implies selfish,
right? You quit on your teammates. It makes you a bad teammate. It makes you a quitter. All of those things. Yeah, I think it's about as bad. You know, texters here say, you know, criminal type things. Yes,
of course,
fair. But I think we're talking about, you know, on the field, on the court, on the ice, etc.
Yeah, soft. Also, the fake tough guy side of things.
And I got to tell you, to athletes, it seems like they're a whole lot more willing to excuse a lot of criminal behavior than they are willing to excuse being a bad teammate or being soft on the field. As much as I don't feel that way, and as much as at times it, I don't, you know, not just at times, all the time, I think it's disgusting the way they defend their teammates, accused of some really heinous things.
No.
I think to them, being soft is worse. To a lot of guys, maybe not to everybody. That's not fair. Shouldn't paint everyone with such a broad stroke. But
some owners and some commissioners are probably in that camp.
Well, that's for sure. Anyway, 206-421-3776. You can text in with some thoughts. I do want to talk about Jesse Winker, because what a great play, great hit last night to essentially win the game for them, coming up with two runs in the eighth inning. If the real Jesse Winker is here, it's just in time. Let's hope that this is the real Jesse Winker, and that maybe it took him a little while to get here. Maybe he needed to step up with Ty France out. Maybe he needed to feel more comfortable, and it took a couple of months for that to happen. Maybe he needed to go through hell in order to come back up the other side, and he has now. Maybe the sort of tensions and fights of the last couple of weeks, because remember, it was Jesse who was right there next to Scott Servais.
In the Houston
battle of words. And then it was Jesse, obviously, who went charging over to stick his hands in the face of injured, what do you call him? The injured guy? The guy with the cast?
Guy with the cast.
He'd go stick his face in the hands in the face of the guy with the cast. Maybe he needed to get punched. I don't know. Whatever it is, it all seems to have kind of woken up Jesse Winker. And I wonder, look, maybe this is closer to the real guy. I mean, you know, did you see his interview after the game last night? This is now the second time that Jesse Winker has let a curse word slip post game. Now, the first time was on our air, Mike Lefko doing a great job interviewing him. That was what led to the Electric Factory. Maybe you remember.
Best day ever. This place is an electric factory, man. Holy shit. This is awesome.
Right, he went on from there. I'm sure you remember. Well, last night, Angie Mentink was doing the honors on Root Sports after the game. And Lefko, by the way, sent out a warning. Now, unfortunately, he tagged Shannon, not Angie. He didn't realize that Angie would get the game-winning interview.
Be careful if you interview Jesse Winker after the game, Shannon Dreher.
So Lefko knew what was coming, and sure enough.
Tell me about your emotions out there, just like a little bit of a release. That was about as fired up as I've ever seen you out at second base. Please take us inside your odd, glorious little mind.
You keep calling me weird. I'm really not that weird. I'm a normal guy. I was just happy to get a hit. It's, you know, baseball's not easy. I was happy to get a hit.
So, yeah, he just drops the same word he did on the first one. So, apparently, either that's one he uses a lot, Or he doesn't see it as something that you can't say on television or the radio. I don't know.
Or he's just trying to get out of doing future interviews.
Maybe.
Like, let's just not get Jesse anymore.
Yeah, he's like, well, it's not the F word, so I think I'm fine. no, it's not really how that works. And poor Brad Adam had to go through the apologies yesterday. But it's interesting that, you know, he does seem a little odd. And Angie, by the way, defended herself after that and is like, he can say whatever he wants. I'm calling him weird.
Like, yeah, he did.
I thought that was great.
Well, that's part of the question, and maybe what you're floating here is what took so long is finding your identity with a new team. Mm-hmm. It's not that you just can plug and play, and your results that you've carried over from previous years are going to be there. It takes some time. And Jerry said the same thing with us last week. Like, that's that. It's the patience. It takes new teammates, new clubbies.
Yep.
New travel. New everything.
Maybe he's also more of a tough guy than the fun-loving dude that we saw right off the bat.
Hmm.
Maybe this is more of who he is. And I kind of keep joking about, oh, he's from Buffalo, so you don't know.
Nobody's going to call him soft.
Well, and I was thinking about it yesterday, right? Maybe he's more of a tough guy than sort of the fun-loving dude that we saw when he walked in and sort of was happy-go-lucky and happy to talk to us. And then it got me to the next question. Maybe he's a real human being who's more complex than that.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not just either weird or tough. Maybe he's an interesting, complex combination of all of the above.
We read that article at spring training about him.
But it couldn't be.
You remember that, though? It was like talking about being kind of soft and like being willing to cry and all of those things. That were, made soft is the wrong word. I shouldn't use that. It's just
we just said it was the ultimate insult.
It was the ultimate insult. Didn't mean to say that. And then when he sat down with the don't trip hat, and he was just really calm and really thoughtful and really nice, and you just immediately kind of put him under that umbrella of like, oh, he's the nice guy in the clubhouse.
Right. But he's an actual human being. He's not a character in a movie where you just point at him and go, oh, yeah, that's the tough guy. Oh, yeah, that's the funny guy.
Right, he's at the boy band where it's like, yeah, the old guy, tough guy.
Right.
Yeah,
he's As it different. Turns out, Jesse Winker's a fully formed human being who can have multiple parts of his personality without having a multiple personality disorder. He's just a guy who might be fun-loving and fun sometimes, a little weird or odd and glorious, as Angie said there, at other times, and maybe a bit of a tough guy, maybe an overreactor, whatever it is he is. At other times. So I try to remind myself on occasion that professional athletes have fully formed personalities and are not just one thing all the time, regardless.
Multidimensional.
Regardless.
A text from the 425, being corrupt might be the only thing worse than being called soft.
Ooh, yeah. Do you remember when, who was it? The guy on the Yankees stole from his teammates. He went into the locker and like stole stuff from Jeter's locker.
Yeah,
that might be worse.
Untrustworthy.
Yeah, you might have that might be the worst.
Good call.
Stealing from your teammates might be as bad as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Or betting on games and being able to kind of be the destroyer of anything.
Let me give you one more. How about being a rat?
Yeah.
So I know I've heard a story of a player, and I won't give you his name. This is about almost 20 years ago. Who was caught cheating on his significant other. And when caught, not only admitted what he'd been doing, but mentioned what every other guy on the team had been doing and told his wife all of that. And the story I've been told is that they went to management and said, if he's not gone, we don't play.
Oh, boy.
So that might be worse. Maybe.
Right.
Rat... / stealing, trustworthy, any
corrupt,
of that, corrupt, those might actually go a little farther than being called soft. How's
true.
That sound?
I think that's absolutely correct.
Yeah. I mean, literally, you know, Jimmy G didn't get run out of the clubhouse, but that guy did. Like, yeah, you have to leave. We won't play with you anymore. In fact, we'll petition essentially as ballplayers not to be on your team if you're a rat. So maybe that's the worst one. I don't know. You guys, if you have more thoughts, send them in. 206-421-3776. Text in with your thoughts because that's certainly a good one. All right. Coming up next, we'll go through everything you need to know, including a couple of injuries last night that may change the Mariners' plans. And then we'll have Jeff Passan as well. So a lot going on. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Certainly been quite a week for Jesse Winker. Remember, he started to hit on the road trip a little bit and then was the first guy in the battle in Anaheim. He was hit with a 7-game suspension, delivered a pizza, Small pepperoni, by the way. He spoke out against Phil Nevin and the umpires. And then last night, in a huge moment, no score, eighth inning, two men on, he came up big.
Here's the stretch and the 0-2. It's on the way to Winker. Swing and a fly ball deep into the gap in right center field. Hayes going back to the warning track near the wall. Leaps up, and this one is off the top of the fence. Extra bases. Crawford will score. Julio rounding third. He'll score. Jesse Winker in at second base with a two-out, two-run double. And the Mariners have the lead. 2-0 here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
He was fired up, too, when he got to second base, maybe just from having to run hard after kind of looking like he thought it was going to be a home run out of the box.
He started a little trot.
A little trot before he realized it was a little chilly out last night. Anyway, it turns out that's all they would need. It's all they would get. Paul Sewall closes the door. Mariners win a tight one, 2-0. Lots of people deserve credit. J.P. Crawford got that rally going. Julio Rodriguez kept it going with a remarkable play, diving out of the way of a tag play at first base. And then, of course, Jesse Winker's big hit. But the other part of the story was Robbie Ray. He was awesome last night and really has been here for the last few weeks. Spun seven innings of brilliant one-hit shutout balls, now allowed just two runs in his last 27 innings of 28 strikeouts. It coincides certainly with the addition of this new two-seam fastball. He honestly looks like a different pitcher.
Major league pitching and defensive game for sure. One-hit shutouts are hard to come by in this league, and quite an effort by Robbie Ray. Continues to keep rolling along. The last four starts have just been electric, what he's been able to do, and really a credit to him to make adjustments as quick as he has and then carry it into the games. And he did a heck of a job tonight.
I think it's one of the coolest stories of this year, a guy just deciding at some point when things aren't going right to add a third pitch, and it's been a tremendous success for him. He joined Bump and Stacey earlier this week and explained how that's helped.
I added a two-seam fastball. I mean, it's a pitch that I've thrown in the past, but I hadn't necessarily gotten the results that I have this year on it. I think for me, in the past, it may not have worked as well because my delivery wasn't as sound as it is now. My delivery, I feel really good about it, and the consistency of my release point is where it needs to be. So I think that, a combination of that and bringing this pitch back and kind of tinkering with it other than just trying to throw a standard two seam, just moving it around, trying to make it better, and actually utilizing it as a weapon has helped me out a ton.
It sure has. He's looked like a different pitcher, and thank God, because it's absolutely something the Mariners have needed.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, let's run through the injury updates. There's some good, some bad. We'll start with Kyle Lewis, Mitch Haniger, and then we'll get to Taylor Trammell. Lewis and Haniger both playing catch on the field before the game yesterday. Haniger was actually taking a few swings. I think I saw Lewis do as well. Shannon Dreyer, our Mariners insider, spoke to Kyle Lewis, said he's been dealing with multiple symptoms after the concussion. He is, though, starting to feel a little bit better. We'll need a rehab stint before he's able to return, so hopefully that happens soon. Haniger, meanwhile, says he's still on the original target date, 10 to 12 weeks away from when he originally hurt himself. As for Trammell, he was lifted from the game after running hard to first base on a double play ball. If you remember, he missed a month earlier this year with a hamstring injury. It is an injury to the same hamstring. So we'll see how he responds, but a DL or an IL stint, rather, is certainly a possibility here. Now, if he misses time, what does that do for Jared Kelnick? Remember, the team's been pretty steadfast about wanting him to take the time in Tacoma he needs and not come back until he's absolutely ready to succeed. Well, that's a lot easier to say, though, when Taylor Trammell's been playing really good ball in right field. What do you do now? Especially if you're going to be out or without some of your other outfielders coming up here in a little while between Julio and Winker, both of whom are likely to be suspended even after the appeal. So going to be some interesting decision-making ahead for the Mariners. Ty France remains in second place in the All-Star voting at first behind Vlad Jr. Unlikely he's going to pass the Blue Jays star, but staying in second should certainly help his cause to be added to the team, even if he's hurt. So make sure you go out and vote for Ty. He will join us a little over an hour from now at 8:30.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
So what's the price for DK Metcalf? That market continues to gain comps, right? Like in the real estate market, Terry McLaurin became the latest wideout to get a big new contract extension. Yesterday signed a $74 million 3-year deal to stay in Washington, a number that puts him just under $24 million a year. Interesting, though, Daniel Snyder could sign off on that from his yacht while avoiding appearing before Congress after being subpoenaed. So it's interesting what you can choose to participate in. Anyway, as for the wide receiver market, the numbers are certainly going up and up and up. Hard to imagine DK is going to accept $1 less than McLaurin, that's for sure. He's been a very good player, but not as freaky or as unique, certainly, as DK is. Seahawks have made their bed, though, right? They didn't trade him before the draft. They're going to have to sign him, so I still expect that to get done. Another future Hall of Famer headed to Seattle. Center Tina Charles has signed with the Storm for the remainder of the season as she hopes to give them a lift. Recently asked out of Phoenix after becoming frustrated with her role on the team there and elected to sign here in Seattle. It's everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour on the Mike Salk Show.
That tweet that Shannon sent out about Kyle Lewis, talked informally with him. He's been dealing with myriad of concussion symptoms, mostly doing better now, but unsure of his timeline. Good to see him on the field. That was also extended by Daniel Kramer's tweet. Just said Kyle Lewis has said he was dealing with quite a few concussion symptoms for a prolonged period, but that they subsided. He was basically in bed for the first week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's another one where, you know, we talked about how much it is, you know, what it means to call a player soft. And I think ultimately we've agreed that being called, you know, a lack of trust or being a rat might actually be worse than that. But it's certainly up high on the list of awful things that you could say about a player.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to say that, and I've seen it, I've seen some of the, you know, keyboard warriors on Twitter, et cetera, going after Kyle Lewis and saying he's soft for not coming back. That's weak.
Yeah, you got to get out of here with that.
That's pretty weak. You don't know what's going on. You don't know the extent of the concussion symptoms. And to hear, you know, some of that news, like, you got to be careful. That's an injury to your brain, man. That's not a hip injury or an arm injury or a leg injury, toe injury. It's your brain.
I tweeted something about it last week, the same similar feeling that I had about concussions. Is I kind of used to, because they're invisible injuries,
yeah.
You know? Like, you look fine. Like, get out there and play.
Yep.
Until I experienced a really bad concussion that I still feel like I'm dealing with.
It's like, what, really?
Oh,
how
yeah.
many years later?
It was in 2020. It was July 2020.
Jeez.
It's a really bad
concussion.
How
do you feel like you're dealing with it?
It's a fogginess that's still lingering. I've had some depression swings ever since then. I've been telling the same stories to a lot of people since then.
So that could be concussion.
Sure.
It could also be we wake up at 4 in the morning.
Oh, no,
that may be a part of it.
Before this job started.
It may also have to do with getting older and some of your other activities. Are you sure it's just concussion related?
The emotional side of it, I think, is concussion related.
Oh, that also might be getting older. I don't know. Maybe your biological clock is ticking.
Maybe you should stop gaslighting me on how I feel physically, Salk. You're one of the terrible ones.
No, I'm not. It is pretty remarkable what that can look like.
Yeah.
So. All right. Coming up next, the great Jeff Passan will join us. We got to find out what he thinks about these suspensions, the way it all went down, the way Major League Baseball has handled the last couple of days here for the Mariners and Angels, etc., and a whole lot more. We'll talk to Jeff next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Just talking about accusations of being called soft because of Jimmy Garoppolo. I just noticed this from Vic Lombardi. This is during the Stanley Cup playoffs. Bednar, he's the coach of the Avalanche, says Darcy Kemper, the goalie, had to go to the optometrist 2 to 3 times a day to retrain his eyes. Other injuries, Val broken foot, Berkey broken foot and thumb, Kadri broken thumb, Gerard broken sternum, Helm abdominal tear. Yeah, no big deal.
What?
They're just playing through all that.
Yeah.
They're not soft.
No.
That is for sure as well. Jeff Passan joins me now as he does weekly. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am doing great, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. It's been a heck of a week so far. I mean, anytime you get the kind of brawl that we saw on Sunday, you got content for days. What did you make of the whole thing?
You know, I'm conflicted when I see something like that because, like, the animalistic part of me, the part that likes chaos and, you know, likes passion and like seeing crazy things happen was what I call it, like, the Beavis part of me, because I feel like Beavis and Butthead and I'm just sitting like fire, you know, like you want to see the world burn sometimes. But then you see Archie Bradley get hurt. Then you see Jesse Winker out for seven games and Julio Rodriguez out in the middle of this Mariners lineup that can't score already, just getting decimated by suspensions. And then you see the stupidity around the whole thing, and it's like, you know, why? Like, why does it have to be this way? It's just, you know, the whole thing's not necessary, but I think there is frustration in both of these organizations that they both feel like they should be better teams than they are, and whether that precipitated this in any way overtly, I don't know, but, you know, pardon me playing armchair psychologist here, I think there's been frustration that's just been boiling over in both places this year, and my goodness, did it ever boil over.
So what are the, so that's interesting. I love sort of the bigger, broader view, because honestly, when you're in the middle of it, you're too busy sort of sorting out the whodunit part of it, right? Who's at fault, et cetera.
Right, right.
But what do you think, if you're in the Mariners' shoes, what are you supposed to do in that point? You know, Nevin has brought out an opener. He's thrown at one guy's head, and now he's hit another guy. What? How else are you supposed to handle it at that point?
I mean, if I'm trying to be the parent in this situation, right? It's like my kids are fighting, and in this scenario, thankfully, nobody from the Angels got hurt. Thrown behind Julio Rodriguez's head, not the right way. Hitting Jesse Winker on the butt is the right way. If it's done the right way, let's let that be the end of it and let it be squashed there.
But, yeah, you know, it's interesting. I feel like if they had just thrown at Julio, they might have let it be. But you don't get a second chance at it. And honestly, and I'll blame the umpires here, I think Winker was not, he didn't go charge the mound. It wasn't a, hey, whatever, we're going round. He's standing there waiting for the umpire to throw out the pitcher and the manager. And when that doesn't happen, right, he gets chirped at, and they're like, hey, get your butt down to first base. And then it's on. It's kind of a weird, it's a weird start to a brawl.
Yeah, and by the way, this was an actual brawl.
Oh, yeah.
I said it on Baseball Tonight this weekend. Most of these baseball fights are tea parties. No, this was a kegger. Like, they were going at it. And I have to say, Anthony Rendon coming out with the left-handed palm strike is one of my favorite moments of the year, when he's got a cast on his right hand. and JP coming over the top with forearm shivers. And then the slow-motion shot of Raisel Iglesias seeding the lawn. Like, it was just a beautiful, beautiful thing. This was a brawl where there were some of those moments that are completely unforgettable.
You mentioned Nevin's reputation. Tell me a little bit more about Phil Nevin. I've heard some stories over the last few days, but what is his reputation in the game?
I mean, he never doesn't have something to say. And listen, in some scenarios, that's really good. He's a very passionate guy, and that passion, I think, has taken him to the place where, he was a big-time prospect coming up and had a decent big league career, never was great, but he's been on coaching staffs, including Aaron Boone's in New York. He's been in big-time situations, and he's getting his shot now as manager after Joe Maddon was fired. And I think that this is a little different than Rob Thompson in Philadelphia. He's been more of a stabilizer. Bill Nevin's tried to be more of a catalyst. And, we're going to come together by any means possible. And if one of those means is getting into a situation where a guy in Andrew Wants, who was a starter in the minor leagues but has been exclusively a reliever in the big leagues, gets brought in as an opener to essentially be a goon, I mean, that's what we were looking at here, right? I think that says something about not just your managerial philosophy, but your philosophy about baseball. And that is, the morals that are used today around baseball, trying to get fighting out of the game, that does not apply to Phil Nevin.
Yeah.
He clearly believes in baseball justice, and he went seeking it.
He got ten
games. Like, that is not an insignificant suspension.
No.
You normally see managers get a couple of games. You do not see them get 10 games.
What's the best fight you've ever seen?
Oh, Padres Braves back in the 80s. You gotta look that thing up. Have you ever seen it before?
I don't know. I don't know whether I have. In the 80s? No, I mean, I know fights in the 80s were real fights.
Yeah, no. This one spilled into the stands. It had multiple different incarnations. I think there were like 20 people ejected. You got 80s mustaches going on. I think Pascual Perez was in the middle of it. Just go look up on YouTube Padres Braves brawl, and you'll be enthralled for 10 minutes.
Sounds good.
It's not just the best brawl ever. It's numbers 1, 2, and 3 on the list.
What is
that far in my mind ahead of all the others?
Best moment in a brawl, though, is it Kyle Farnsworth taking down Paul Wilson?
No, it's Nolan Ryan giving Robin Ventura noogies.
I think I'd go with Farnsworth. I love the Farnsworth one. I think I've probably watched that on YouTube 100 times.
What about Coco Crisp charging mound and like doing the Matrix stuff?
I remember that. Yeah, that's a funny one.
Yeah, were you in Boston then?
I think
that might be a little bit before your time.
No, I was there when Coco got there. It might have been after I left, though. I don't know. I don't remember. I don't remember if I was there for that or not. I remember watching.
Sure it was against the Rays.
Well, there were a bunch against the Rays. I remember Trot Nixon throwing his bat at, I want to say, Ryan Roop. He did one of those things, like Roop kept hitting him and he wasn't sure what to do. So he did the thing where it was like he swung, but he let go of the bat on his swing. So it went out to the pitcher's mound. That's kind of an underrated move.
There was an Alcantara, I'm forgetting
Izzy Alcantara
name in
yes.
the minor. Yeah, Izzy Alcantara in the minor leagues. Do you remember what he did? I think he did like a mule kick to the catcher. And after mule kicking the catcher, charged the mound. He may have had the bat in his hand. I don't know if I'm conflating these, but the mule kick to the catcher is always a-plus move.
Some actual baseball conversation, not just fighting, before we move on. You mentioned Winker. He's actually finally starting to hit the ball. Do you think the real Jesse Winker is still in there?
Yeah, I do. And I'm not sure that the Jesse Winker the Mariners thought that they were getting, you know, the guy who had the best splits against left-handers in the game over the last few years, you know, right up there with Bryce Harper, is going to show up because, I mean, that guy is elite of elite. We just haven't seen that to this point. Let me ask you a question. You have a better sense for this than me. What is the feeling around Seattle about Jesse Winker? Because he is clearly a divisive personality. I mean, they hate him in New York. Flipping the double bird to the crowd in Anaheim. Like, there's a lot going on there.
Good question.
Mariners fans, have they glommed onto that, or are they like, dude, go hit, and then you can be the tough guy?
Well, I think both, and it's funny, we started off part of the show today talking about that, because when Winker first arrived, the first impression of him, I don't know if you've ever met him, is that he is a really sort of fun-loving, affable, a little bit offbeat kind of a guy, right? He walked over to my radio desk and was just like, hey, can I jump on? And we just like, and he's weird and kind of fun and funny. But yeah, at the same time, you've got, you know, and the thing with the Mets fan seems more tongue-in-cheek, kind of fun
playful.
Than it
yeah,
does. Yeah, it's
totally
playful.
I appreciate anyone who will go up against fan bases. I do.
But let's also be clear, Jeff. He was the first one out of the dugout when the Mariners kind of beefed with the Astros a couple weeks ago. He's the one who was in the middle of all of this, and it led me to a startling conclusion, which is that he might not just be one thing. He might be an actual complex human being.
I mean, shocking conclusion to draw, Mike. that these people are people.
Yes. He's not just a movie character. He's an actual human.
This is why you get the big bucks, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I came up with. But I think he is, and he does seem to have a bit of a fire starter kind of personality, and it's made us wonder whether it took him some time to really get comfortable here and to be embraced by his teammates, et cetera. And I wonder if the last week or two has helped. I don't think it's hurt that, especially when he comes up with a big game-winning double last night.
Exactly. I think it's one of those things where this is a Mariners organization, especially when Mitch Haniger is out, that craves leadership. And I think J.P. Crawford fills that vacuum. I think Julio Rodriguez, in the long run, is going to be that guy. He's got it in him. I think he wants that. But you need a red ass on your team. I mean, that's an old baseball term right there. And Jesse Winker embodies that. If the Mariners are going to go down this year, they're going to go down fighting. They're going to go down swinging. It's not going to be passive. And I think Jesse Winker taking the tack that he did illustrates that this team still has, quite literally and figuratively as well, some fight in it.
Some texts. I love Winker. I love Winker. Best Mariner acquisition in a long time. He's a legend now. We love Wink. He got a standing ovation on Monday. Frick yeah, Mike. I would die for Jesse Winker. So there you go. There's
wow.
your answer.
Yeah. I mean, that tells you right there. All fans want is to see passion, right?
Yeah, like, but also you got to be good too. You got to be good too.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay, it's the two P's. It's passion and it's production. And if you can marry the two, that's when you're a legend. If you're just the guy who's going out and starting fights, that's not what you want to be known for. You want to be known as the guy who hits the game-winning double and goes and starts fights. You don't want to be the guy who starts fights and then can't back it up.
Good stuff. Jeff, thank you as always. Good conversation. We'll do it next week.
Looking forward to it, Mike.
All right, man. Have a good fourth. There's Jeff Passan who joins me every single Wednesday at 7:30. And complex human being. Who would have ever guessed? He's like a real human with a fully formed personality and all of that.
What a conclusion.
Yeah. Well, as Jeff said, that's why I get paid the big bucks. Let's talk to Brock.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Hey, buddy.
Good Wednesday morning.
Yeah, it has been so far.
Good.
A lot going on today.
Good.
I was thinking about something you said yesterday.
Oh, boy.
And I wanted to follow up on it.
Okay.
Did you call yourself a Drew Lock supporter?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I think he's gotten a raw deal. I think he's is a bunch of these young, talented QBs that come out of college. Some land in terrific situations. Russell Wilson landed in a terrific situation. He made it. He cut through. He achieved and he performed everything that you just heard from Passan, right? The passion and the performance. He did all of that. But he landed in a pretty incredible place. And it's not often that I think back to my career and like what ifs and what ifs. You know that. I don't really harbor any resentment or bitterness. You do. You harbor more bitterness towards Holmgren than I do. God bless you for that. I love you.
He's the wrong coach for you.
Yeah.
It's not your fault. I'm like Robin Williams. It's not your fault.
Wasn't the right fit. What if, though, instead, the Baltimore Ravens in the second round, the 42nd pick, didn't trade for Tony Banks, but did what they said they were going to do and drafted me. And I would have gone to a team of Tony Siragusa and Ray Lewis and elite defense, Jamal Lewis, and we could have run. Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing at you playing with Ray Lewis, Tony Siragusa, and the rest of that team.
Why are you laughing?
And the idea of that being even a better fit than Michael.
Hey, Justin, I'm about ready to hang up. I'm about ready to disconnect my Comrex.
I can hear it. Just going to have to let him go on this one for just a second.
That ain't Brock. I don't think anything's funny about that. Okay, I should have said an elite defense, and then Jonathan Ogden, Jamal Lewis, a run play action defensive team. That's what I was built for.
Yes.
That's what I had in Washington. When we had success and won a lot of games and everything else, Corey Dillon was the hammer. We play actioned, took care of the ball, all of those things. What if I would have landed on that team in 99, right? And would have been able to grow with them and develop with them and wouldn't have had to, had a rebuild, which we had in Seattle while I was here, and would have had that group to build around. Right. And that's just, it wasn't in the cards. It wasn't meant to be. No, by the way, could have flown 3,000 miles away, gotten out of the fishbowl, everything else. We would have had to grown up even faster. But, that wasn't in the cards for me. Instead, it was to come here and some power struggles early, a rebuild, and I'm out. And Drew Lock came to Denver and came into an environment where expectations are sky high, where Peyton and John Elway have statues, where that's the level of play, and went to work for Vic Fangio. Mm-hmm. And it just was, just wasn't a healthy environment. And I would love to see him at least get an opportunity in moments to see if he can be a difference maker. I do. I do support that. I do like the thought of a young guy getting an opportunity. And people in Denver will say, oh, you got 20 starts. You got all the opportunity you wanted. Okay. Playing for Vic Fangio. Playing for an old guard, old school, nobody wants, will never be a head coach again. Not a head coach. Good defensive coordinator. Never a head coach. A dysfunctional organization. No ownership. All of that. A GM that, you know, in John Elway that was done working at that stage and at that point. So, I do. I do want to see Drew at least get a knock, get in the batter's box, and get an opportunity versus live bullets.
Yeah, I don't.
I know you don't.
I mean, I get where you're saying. I think you're probably projecting.
And I'm probably smitten, right? And I'm probably smitten because I also spent a day hanging out with him.
Right.
You know, he was just a guy that related to Molly and Macy and Titus as well as he did the guy at Chipotle. Like he's just a, you know, he's a good kid.
That's what everyone says, right? Yes. He's a good kid who everybody likes.
Yes.
I've not heard the second part of that he's a leader, that all, mm-hmm. you know, all of that stuff. And, you know, funny, that kind of brings me, because we've been saying that's one of the best parts about Jimmy Garoppolo. Have you heard this Martellus Bennett and Julian Edelman stuff?
Yeah.
That's not great. So yeah. I played this earlier. Here's a little of Martellus Bennett.
Bro, we lost two games. One of them was because Jimmy Garoppolo was being a and trying to quit. He quit before us on the last, decided not to play right before the game.
He goes on from there. I won't play the whole thing. But then Edelman kind of jumps in and is like, yeah, he wasn't the only one who felt that way. So when you hear that,
yes,
well,
it's why San Francisco passed.
Is it though? Say, because we've heard the opposite. We've heard in San Francisco he was a fantastic leader that they loved.
Well, that was Lewis, right? That was Lewis Riddick, and that's one man's opinion. He wasn't in the locker room.
I've heard that elsewhere.
He wasn't playing. There are a lot of times as Seahawk fans, you know, that we watched and played against Jimmy Garoppolo, and I thought, get to him, and he's soft.
Mm.
Hit him like a lot of quarterbacks, and he will shut it down. Like, you know, he is a guy you can sack. He is a guy you can knock around. He is a guy that can get hit and harassed and bothered. And the Seahawks had their way with him most of the time. You know, we're an inch away from beating him just about every single time they played him. So, yeah, he never – I've said this to you for a couple months. None of these guys overwhelm me. You and I were overwhelmed by Russell Wilson.
Right.
And maybe we had, you said the word projecting, right? Because we had talked to him. We'd certainly talked a lot about him to the point that John Schneider said, why don't you guys stop talking about him if you want him to come here to Seattle and be on the board and everything else. So maybe we are projecting, maybe we're a little biased, but Mike, we were overwhelmed by his talent, by rookie minicamp.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's go.
Well, and I'm not suggesting anyone's in that same realm. Of course not. It's just who's the best of the four.
Yes. And I want to be. Like, that's what I want to be. And if I'm in that position, and I said this on our podcast, like, I want to be in that position where it's like, yeah, okay, maybe others don't see it with Russell, but I do. And I'm going to stand on that box, and I'm going to go for it. Maybe others don't see it with Patrick Mahomes, but I did.
So are you then you're trying to turn Drew Lock into that? Because none of these four guys have that.
No, they don't.
If that's what you're looking for, no one has that.
Nope. Right. No, but this is a root for. As I said, this is not enamored with. This is not overwhelmed. It's just a guy. I kind of have a rooting interest for a guy that I think got a raw deal, a bit run out of town, had to live in an expectation world. I talked to Tyler Palumbis about this. I know Tyler came on your show, and Tyler, you know, shot me a text. I remember when that trade happened and Drew went out there. He's like, man, I hope for his sake he gets what I get. Because I was done. I was overwhelmed. I let the fans' expectations and everything bother me and insecure. And then I got to Seattle and had a breath of fresh air with Pete. And I'm like, wow, I can do this. I can play.
Which is funny because you talk to him and he doesn't sound like he likes Pete that much.
No, but it was the environment.
Yeah,
he's kind of a crusty old O-lineman. You know, those guys, they kind of operate their own little world, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to be like, he's not animated. He's not buying into that. But the culture, the positivity, the build up, not tear down, the develop, not demean. I mean, the things that Drew was under here in Denver. So that's where I have a rooting interest. Am I overwhelmed by his talent? No. Am I planting my flag saying he should absolutely be the guy? No. Is Baker Mayfield, quite honestly, the more you and I talk about this, and we'll do it again today on our podcast, the more we talk about it, do I kind of start to lean into him a little bit? Yeah. But then talk to Jarvis Landry, talk to OBJ, mm-hmm. talk to OBJ's dad, talk to people in that locker room.
Yeah,
right?
Love him.
I mean, no.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So
what is worse than being called soft?
Not much, man. Is a QB and a football player, okay, that is about the worst thing you could possibly.
So we came up with two that might be worse. One, a rat.
Yeah.
As a teammate.
Yes, but in this day and age, in the social media world and everything else, and everybody having an opinion, everybody having a camera, everybody being sourced, everybody behind the scenes.
Saying out loud what your teammates are doing or anything like that, I think being a rat is pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. I don't think it's as bad as being soft.
Wow. The other was stealing from your teammates.
Oh, yeah, that's just...
Right, being corrupt in some way, right? Either like being paid to take a dive or in some way or stealing from your teammates.
Yeah, which you've seen happen. Like someone steals something out of someone else's locker.
Right.
You're dead to me. Get the guillotine. Get the locker room guillotine and chop his head off before he even gets out of the locker room. You're just dead to me.
All right.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Sorry, that just came out today.
That came out. I saw that like a week ago. I was on an airplane somewhere.
Yeah.
I think it was Mike's birthday or something. And they played that. And
that's all you can think of is how this guy ruined your career by yelling at you so much.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Hey, rock, master! Master!
For those of you who've never heard the original, it sounded like this.
Hey, rock! Master!
Like, it wasn't that hard
to
put it to Master of Puppets.
Let me hear that one more time.
The original or the music?
No, the music.
Hey! Rock! Master! Master!
That's almost as funny. Almost as funny as you playing with Ray Lewis and the rest of those guys.
I didn't think that was funny at all.
All right. Well, we'll talk later on the podcast. Plus, I've got my moral dilemma for you.
Yeah, I've been thinking
today
about that all day.
You don't know what it is, though.
I do not know.
Maybe I shouldn't tell you.
No, don't tell me.
Might not end well for me.
I want to be totally teased.
All right.
All the way to the end. Okay.
See you, buddy. We'll talk later. There's Brock Huard every morning, 7:45 and 9:30 here on the Mike Salk Show. All right. Well, Brock says that he's interested in Baker. Guess who spoke yesterday? Baker Mayfield. You want to hear what he had to say and how it might relate to coming to Seattle? Play it for you next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.